Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Happy Valentine's Day. And let's see, Valentine's Day, it's also my Uncle Clara's birthday. Happy birthday, Claire Rowe. They're in New Ego, Michigan, way up there, listening on WTKG. And welcome to our program. By the way, a Valentine's Day story. I don't know if this is a Valentine's Day story or not, but it's an interesting piece from the front page of our local paper here in Oregon. Researchers from Duke University found that male monkeys will forego their own reward, juice, in exchange for being permitted to view pictures of female monkeys' bottoms. So, not speaking on behalf of myself, of course. White House to the issues of the day. Let's get to the issues. Our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln: the probability that we may fail in the struggle ought not to deter us from the support of a cause we believe to be just. In other words, don't keep your powder dry. That idiotic policy of the, we're not going to fight the Supreme Court nominee. We've got to keep our powder dry. We're not going to contest that House race. We've got to keep our powder. Come on. Anyhow, coming up today on the program, has politics become indistinguishable from prostitution? If we attack, in our second hour, if we attack Iran, are we really attacking ourselves? In our third hour, are our insurance companies writing prescriptions for death? And just a mind-boggling story that I want to share with you. But first, what has happened to the government of the people, by the people, and for the people of the United States? This, for example, from Newsmax. Newsmax, the right-wing news site, a conservative news site. The headline, Rove to Senators, Clear Bush or Else. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove has threatened to blacklist any Republican who votes against President Bush in the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation of the administration's unauthorized wiretapping. Now, what does this mean? When Rove blacklists a Republican, that means that that Republican no longer gets any money or any support from the president for the reelection bid. And a third of the Senate is up for reelection right now. So you've got a bunch of Republican senators out there, a third of the Republican senators running for reelection. And Karl Rove saying, if you guys vote to investigate, basically to investigate Bush, you're toast. Well, as Newsmax says, being blacklisted would mean an end to any White House political or financial support for senators running for re-election this year, sources told Insight Magazine, which is the parent source of this. It's hardball all the way, one GOP congressional aide declared. The administration is worried that the defection, now get this, this is where it gets really weird, that the defection of a handful of Republican committee members could lead to a finding that Bush violated the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and could also possibly lead to impeachment hearings. During the past few weeks, Rove has been meeting with GOP committee members to deliver the message, a vote against Bush would ravage Republican prospects in this year's congressional elections, Insight reports. But while Rove is threatening the stick, the blacklist, he's also holding out a carrot. White House offers to help loyal candidates with money in politics and publicity, such as photo ops with the president. Now, the White House saying that they're going to, if a Republican votes on the Senate Judiciary Committee or in the Senate, if it reaches that point, votes to investigate the president with his illegal domestic spying. What does that mean? What does that mean? What kind of money are we talking about here? Well, just in terms of the money coming from taxpayers, I mean, forget about all the money that the oil industry is giving to this administration, all of the money that the financial services industry is giving to them in the hopes that they'll privatize Social Security, all of the money that the health insurance industry, in the hopes that they'll further destroy Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, set aside the billions of dollars that are coming in lobby. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just look at what the administration is doing right now in violation of the law. the law says, specifically the Smith Act and others, say it is against the law for the executive branch of government, the president and his departments, to use federal money to create propaganda that is distributed in a way that it may hit Americans. In other words, we used to have radio free Europe, or radio free America, you know, radio, and, but they weren't for Americans. They were for the Russians. I mean, we broadcast in Russian. We broadcast in Chinese. We broadcast in Spanish. We brought, you know, it was for other people in the world. We didn't have a Radio Free America here in the United States broadcasting in English saying, the Kennedy administration is wonderful people. You should do what they say. LBJ is a marvelous guy. Richard Nixon, he's a great guy. No, but now, under this administration, they're making these phony news releases and these phony stories that are coming out, paying off people like Armstrong Williams to get the story out there. Henry Waxman, Elijah Cummings, Nancy Pelosi, other senior Democrats, yesterday, released a new Government Accountability Office report. Now, the Government Accountability Office is a nonpartisan arm of Congress. Congress has an investigative arm. It works for all of Congress. It doesn't work for the Republicans, doesn't work for the Democrats, doesn't work for who's in charge. Any member of Congress can ask for a report, and they do the research. And these people are not political appointees, and they're just doing stand-up work, just very straightforward stuff. And they concluded, I'm quoting Henry Waxman now, they concluded that the Bush administration spent more than $1.6 billion. Now, a billion is 1,000 million. $1.6 billion in PR media contacts over a two-and-a-half-year span, over the last two-and-a-half years. It's a mind-boggling amount of money. As Waxman says, the government is spending over $1 billion per year on PR and advertising. Now, Nancy Pelosi puts a political spin on this. She says no amount of money will successfully sell the Bush administration's failed policies, from the war in Iraq to its disastrous energy policy to its confusing Medicare prescription drug benefits. Yeah, I would take exception. I think, Nancy Pelosi, that you're wrong. I think that if these guys spend enough money, they can make people think up is down. They can make people think that a guy who is a war hero, who volunteered to serve his country with two tours of duty in Vietnam and was wounded in action, was actually a creep. Because they did. I mean, with enough money, and not just Max Cleland in Georgia, and not just John Kerry. I mean, with enough money, the Republicans can literally make you think that up is down. So anyhow, she says no amount of money is going to sell this stuff. I don't think so. Congressman Miller, a little less sanguine, he says, the extent of the Bush administration's propaganda effort is unprecedented and disturbing. And then he again puts the political spin on it, which is true. He says, the fact is that after all the spin, the American people are stuck with high prescription drug prices, high gas prices, high college costs. This report raises serious questions about this administration's priorities for this country. Elijah Cummings, a little blunter, he says, it's unbelievable that the administration on several occasions has used limited taxpayer dollars to secretly promote initiatives such as No Child Left Behind while underfunding money for our schools, books, technology, and other school programs. Democrats requested the GAO conduct the study after evidence emerged last year that the Bush administration had conducted or commissioned covert propaganda from PR firms. Here's how they spent it. This study looked at 2003, 2004, and the first two quarters of 2005. And what they found was during that time, the administration spent $197 million with PR firms, $15 million being passed out to individual members of the media. Now, we know Armstrong Williams got a couple hundred thousand. Who got the rest of that $15 million? We don't know. And $1.4 billion with advertising agencies. They're looking at things like marriage-related research initiatives. The GAO's accounting is very limited. The GAO surveyed only 7 of the 15 cabinet-level departments, relied on self-reported information from the agencies, and did not include subcontracts, task orders on existing contracts, or PR work done by government employees on their own salary. So in other words, this is just the tip of the iceberg. And this is where the GAO went to these agencies who all work for Bush, and in the executive branch, the cabinet agencies, the 15 cabinet-level departments, and said, would you please give us this information? Only 7 of them said, yes, we'll tell you. And this, and with that, they came up with this over $1 billion. I mean, it's propaganda at home. And then, you know, meanwhile, our vice president is out there blasting away, and the news is changing. I got to tell you about that when we come right back. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't take your guns to town.
Welcome back, my friends.
He drank his first strong liquor then to calm his shaking hands.
And then he went out to hunt some quail.
At last he had become a man.
Indeed. Welcome back, my friends. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Let me just digress for a moment from my rant about what's going on here with the tragedy of the executive branch of our government to speak about the tragedy of the number two guy in the executive branch of our government. This news release, I am holding the news release in my hand here, this from Shirley Ann Bannister, Public Affairs, sent out to all the media this morning for immediate release, February 14, 2004. The media Hunt Cheney was the VP on the grassy knoll. The major news media are acting as if they're going to discover that Vice President Cheney was on the grassy knoll, declared Cliff Kincaid, editor of Accuracy in Media, AIM. Accuracy in Media, of course, is this right-wing crank group that for years has made a business out of intimidating the mainstream media and pushing them always harder and harder to the right. And, the farther right they go, the farther, the happier these guys are. So Cliff Kincaid, he says, I guess it's better for the press to beat up Cheney than to come up with more lame excuses about why they won't publish or show those controversial Muhammad cartoons. So, number one, he's going to try and change the subject away from Cheney and toward the Muhammad cartoons. The AIM editor said that the media, in their desire to gin up a Watergate-style scandal, have made themselves into a laughingstock. From charges that Cheney was drinking to claims that the shooting was an assassination attempt, our media have behaved in a completely irresponsible manner that brings discredit upon journalism profession, said Kincaid. By acting in this rabid manner, Kincaid said, reporters only reinforce the public perception of a liberal media bias. Said Kincaid, reporters have shot themselves in the foot, and no hospital can repair the damage. Their credibility is shot. Okay. So as soon as this thing comes out, and so how does the mainstream media respond? Well, CBS removes from their website, from their news stories, this little bit that was in the original CBS story. This was removed. Okay, this is the part that was removed. CBS News White House correspondent Peter Mayer reports Texas authorities are complaining that the Secret Service barred them from speaking to Cheney after the incident. Kennedy County, Texas, Sheriff's Lieutenant Guzman said deputies first learned of the shooting when an ambulance was called. McClellan was asked about it at the press briefing but played dumb. Question, Scott, there's a report coming out of the sheriff's deputy who said he was prevented from interviewing the vice president by the Secret Service. Do you know anything about that, and is it appropriate? McClellan, no, I don't know anything about that. This has been removed from the CBS website. So they're not talking about the fact that Cheney wouldn't talk to the cops for 15 hours. Now, we're all adults here. We've seen the world. It's like, who are the folks who generally, if they're involved in an accident, whether it's a car accident or an accidental shooting, don't want to talk to the cops for 15 hours? In my experience, it's been people who are plastered. I can think of no other reason why somebody would refuse to talk to the police for 15 hours after a shooting incident. And in fact, the police, they sent this guy out, Mr. San Miguel, this deputy sheriff, they sent him out that evening, and he was turned away. Cheney said, no, I'm not going to talk to him. Come back in the morning. My people have talked to your people, and you can have an interview in the morning. And it says, we'll see. We'll see how this thing plays out. Just some of the quick notes, a couple of quick emails that I got on this thing. This is from Jay in Washington. He says, Washington State, he says, Tom, my bona fides, certified shooting coach by the NRA and USA Shooting, part of the Olympic NCAA regime, NRA life member, active competitive rifle shooter for 50 years, and hunter. Fact. Nearly every hunting incident nationwide that involves firearms also has alcohol or drug use involved. Every young person who wants to hunt must pass some form, depending on the state, of a hunter safety program. All of our youth entering sport know about not shooting and drinking. Thank you, Jack. Doug in Alaska listens to us on KUDO in Anchorage. He says, my name is Doug, and I live up here in Alaska. I've hunted my entire life. I grew up in rural Colorado. Now I live here. Heard your discussion today on KUDO. He says, anyway, what Cheney did was so disgusting, it has the hunting community upset. Just visit a few hunting websites and you'll see. He says, As I'm typing this, I have two bird dogs laying at my feet while my wife is preparing a moose meatloaf. Anyway, when quail hunting or any other upland bird, the party moves in a parallel line. Each man has an area from about 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock in front of them where they can safely shoot. That's it. No swinging 180 degrees. No shooting behind. None of that crap. 10 to 2 is your shooting lane. Also, if you're shooting over dogs, when the bird is flushed, it is flying low. You yell, no bird! So some trigger-happy moron like Cheney does not kill your dog that took you 2 years to completely train. Cheney did not have a valid license. That means he was poaching, pure and simple. You're hunting without a valid license, you're poaching. And he goes on, he talks about how he loves to hunt. He hunts, he loves planning his hunts, looking at the map, figuring out how to get in there. Loves stalking the animals, harvesting it, cleaning it, skinning it. He says, for me, that's very natural. Much more natural than going to Safeway and picking up some cellophane-wrapped random chuck beef. He says, sometimes we forget if we eat flesh, be it a lowly McDonald's burger, an animalist diet. It's a fact of life. He says, however, Cheney is no hunter. He's a killer. Anyone who go out and shoots 70 pen-raised pheasants in an afternoon is someone who simply enjoys killing, loves to see the bodies flop. There are people like that that make me ill. Thanks a lot, Todd. 27 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I'm an independent trucker. A mother loving, overloaded, owner operator, just tearing up the two lane road.
Indeed. Welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Yeah, this is interesting. Somebody else writes in watching Fox News yesterday, watching the whole spin on the Cheney thing. And this from GT Catfish, who says, his screen name, who says, I'm really getting a kick out of your show today. I tuned into Fox News to see the spin, and Dayside is on. Mike Jarek and Juliet Huddy are in the middle of bringing on a guest who is credible enough to provide insight into aspects of quail hunting. Sorry, I didn't get her name. In any case, so here's this woman who is like an expert on quail hunting. They got her on. And so Mike, I don't know who Mike Jarek is. I don't watch Fox News in the day, so I guess he's the Fox News guy. So in any case, Mike directs extra persons to gather onto the set to illustrate a hunting line. The creditable guest begins describing how each hunter in the line has an area to watch, and barrels of shotguns never cross other hunters' field of view. Mike then directs Juliet, who is acting as Harry Whittington, to retrieve a just-shot bird, but is also in front of the hunter's line. Mike then begins to press the creditable guest. When Whittington was returning to the line, it should have been his responsibility to notify the other hunters that he's returning to the line. She insists that though Whittington is not online, Cheney, when engaging a bird, should have announced that he's engaging the bird. Mike redirects it back, as it was more Whittington's responsibility to announce his return, but the guest reinforces that both hunters should have been making announcements. Mike is silent for a moment, but then follows up with, this is a hunting accident. How many hunting accidents happen across this nation? The guest responds that if they're experienced, safe hunters, accidents shouldn't happen. Mike is silent, gives the guest a strange look, He moves laterally away from her, closer to Juliet, and announces that they have to go to a break. I start laughing. Commercials are over, and suddenly the program has changed topics to why we should be going to war against Iran. Fox News should be shut down, says GT Catfish. Thanks a lot for the email. That's a good one. I mean, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. By the way, yesterday we were Alec Dubrow of ILCA, International Labor Communications Association, and I were wondering who was this bunch that put out the full page advertisement, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, bashing the unions. It turns out who is this from John Stauber, who is the Center for Media and Democracy. He says, who is behind the ad? Nothing in the advertisement or on their website mentions Rick Berman, but bingo, that's who owns the website domain name. Rick Berman is a right-wing lobbyist who has built a lucrative career establishing industry-funded front groups, including fishscam.com, the Center for Consumer Freedom, the Employment Policies Institute, the Employment Roundtable, and activistcash.com. Berman specializes in personal attacks, smear tactics, and playing loose with the facts. He's raised millions of dollars in tobacco, booze, biotech, fast food, grocery, and other businesses eager to have Berman do their dirty work. Another Rick Berman connection to the Center for Union Facts is Sarah Longwell, the group's PR contact, who has also worked for Berman's Employment Policies Institute. So I guess we've figured out who's behind that group. Maybe we'll get them on the air and see what they have to say. Dick Cheney, of course, the vice president who can't shoot straight, all kinds of jokes about it today. I'm not going to revisit them. I'm sure that they're all over the mainstream media. I want to get back to this thing about the Constitution, then we'll be taking your calls. I know there's a bunch of folks on hold, and we will get to the phone calls in just a minute. The American bar, but this gets back to this original issue that Karl Rove is telling senators, that the Republican senators, and this is where if a Republican senator is representing you, you may want to call them at 888-355-3588. And let them know that you'd like them to participate in the investigation of whether George W. Bush broke the law by spying on individuals within the United States, by secretly wiretapping conversations without a court order, in violation of the Fourth Amendment and in violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The American Bar Association now, and Karl Rove coming out saying if any senators vote to investigate the president, because that could conceivably lead to impeachment, they're not going to get any money from the president. And we just discovered that the president has a $1.6 billion slush fund just for internal PR. This is our tax dollars, not to mention the $1 billion in lobbying. In fact, I'll get to that in just a second. But here, the American Bar Association today denounced President Bush's warrantless domestic surveillance program, accusing him of exceeding his powers under the Constitution. This is from the Associated Press, Anna Johnson. The nation's largest organization of lawyers adopted a policy opposing any future government use of electronic surveillance in the U.S. for foreign intelligence purposes without first obtaining warrants from a special court set up under the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The ABA has urged Congress to affirm that when it authorized Bush to go to war, it did not intend to endorse warrantless spying. The group also called on Congress to investigate the president's program to determine its legality. So when the ABA says that they think that, for example, Sam Alito is a qualified judge, Bush is all over it like white on rice. He's the ABA said the American, the ABA, you got to pay attention to the ABA. The ABA, it's really important. The ABA likes this guy. But when the ABA comes out and says that George Bush has broken the law, certainly not going to hear much about it from the Republicans, and it'll be interesting to see if you hear anything about it from even the mainstream media. Now, here's where it gets really weird. This is in today's Wall Street Journal. U.S. corporations, an article by Brody Mullins. U.S. lobbying tab hits a record. U.S. corporations and interest groups spent a total of $1.16 billion to lobby Washington in the first half of 2005, setting a record. This is just in the first 2 months of 2005. $1.16 billion to lobby 435 members of Congress, 535 with the Senate, 535 members of Congress, and the president and the vice president. Spending on lobbying rose $85 million between January and June 30th, 2005, compared to the previous six-month period. They spent about $6.5 million a day to lobby Congress and the Bush administration.
The number two lobbying organization was GE. The first was AARP. They spent $27.5 million to try and defeat the Social Security privatization. GE, the number two lobbyist, spent half as much to lobby on issues such as asbestos litigation overhaul and tax policy. U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Commerce's Institute of Legal Reform spent $9.5 million in lobbying for the asbestos bill, bankruptcy overhaul, and class action legislation. Which brings us back to our original question for the hour. Have we reached the point where the business of government and the business of prostitution are indistinguishable? And I think we have, frankly. In fact, I would say that the business of prostitution is probably more honest. The Center for Union, I mentioned about the so-called Center for Union Facts. Already told you about that. And then we discover that Valerie Plame, who this guy outed, this, you know, Scooter Libby, now they're asking Scooter Libby to decipher his own handwriting because they can't read it, right? Scooter Libby, apparently the vice president, this should be the real story about Dick Cheney. According to Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney authorized the release of classified information, which may or may not include Valerie Plame's identity. Apparently it does. And I'm sure he would much rather be the butt of a joke on Jay Leno than be hauled in front of Congress or in front of a special prosecutor for breaking the law. For treason. For outing a CIA officer for what George Herbert Walker Bush called treason, what a Republican president called treason. And now we're discovering that Valerie Plame's job was to track weapons of mass destruction with regard to Iran. And suddenly we don't know anything about Iran. It's incredible. Rich in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Hey, I just heard on one of the other networks the other day after the shooting that the lawyer that he shot might have had some stuff that he was going public with on Cheney.
Oh, really?
So they stuck with the Iraq policy, so they figured he'd take a preemptive strike.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Rich.
But like in Iraq, he screwed that up too.
Yeah, he did. What's the other joke that one of the late night comics said? You know, this is the administration's new Social Security policy, 78 years old, and bang, you're out of here. Paul in Valdosta, Georgia. Hey, Paul, what's up?
I'll tell you, I think we're misidentifying this administration in its entirety. If any administration prior to 1990 had done what this bunch is doing, the TV preachers, talk radio bunch, this guy you mentioned, Kincaid, a while ago, they would be calling them panko, communist, traitor.
Oh, they'd be hysterical. And they would be hysterical.
They would be, yeah, they'd be totally beyond themselves. So I think we're coining the problem wrong. The problem is that George Bush, Dick Cheney, and the TV preachers and talk radio connection believe that the American people, and particularly conservative people, I want the conservatives to hear this, are the flowers of their lives, a bunch of damn blooming idiots.
Yeah, they are, and I have to say, I think that they are vastly underestimating the intelligence of the American people.
Now, the sad thing is, when we give $80 billion a year to the rich to live outside this country, we start a preemptive war financed with China, and the interest on the China debt now is paying most of their doggone cost of their defense apparatus.
That's right.
Where are we going to wake up?
Yeah, well, I think that we're starting to wake up, Paul, and I appreciate your calling, and thanks for listening to us there in Valdosta. I think that we are starting to wake up. I think that there is a trend across America. You're seeing people say, hey, wait a minute, something is really, really wrong. Because Bush was able to lie his way into the presidency in the first place to a certain extent, but now people are seeing what the real policies are, and they're saying, no thanks. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'd get it one piece at a time, and it wouldn't cost me a dime. You'll know it's me when I come through your town.
And welcome back, my friends.
I'm going to ride around in style. I'm going to drive everybody wild. Cause I'll have the only one there is around.
It's the place where smart people get the news. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. 50 minutes past the hour, coming up on 9 minutes before the top of the hour. Rich in Caribou, Wisconsin on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I am just great. What's up, Rich?
Well, I believe that a lot of the both parties are pretty much bought and sold, and I believe our only hope is through independence, through your friend there, Bernie Sanders and people like that, outsiders. And I had a lot of hope for a lot of the war veterans that were running on the Democratic side, and I believe this morning we got stabbed in the back by the Democratic powers that be in Ohio with Paul Hackett not being they're throwing their support behind him. And the person they're supporting is just, you know, another, big money politician type, and it totally turns me off.
Yeah, Brown is his name.
Yeah.
But, you know, the guy they're supporting has already raised $2.4 million for the race. And Paul Hackett, when he withdrew, issued a statement that I'm reading this thing, and it's sort of like, you know, talking about your family's dirty underwear kind of thing, you know, I mean, dirty laundry or whatever. My sense of it is that if Hackett is going to withdraw in such a messy way, that he wasn't the right man to be running for the United States Senate. I mean, you want somebody who at least understands the basic fundamentals of politics in the Senate. And you and I may agree with Paul Hackett totally on the war, but this guy, you know, may be a loose cannon in other areas. He apparently doesn't understand how the political process works.
Well, I just believe that the other guy is going to spend a lot of money and lose anyway, because I've lived in that state for a long time, and I know how the people think, and there were actually a lot of Republican conservative people who never vote outside the Republican arena that were excited about Paul Hackett.
No, I hear you. I hear you, Rich. I understand exactly what you're saying. And if Hackett wanted to take this guy Brown on, what he should have done was he should have gone out there and he should have been knocking on doors and he should have been raising money and he should have proven to the Democratic Party that he has a better chance of beating the incumbent candidate than this Brown guy does. And, you know, that's my take on it. I realize that Hackett is a hero to many progressives. I have to say, and because of his anti-war stance and because the guy's a vet, and yet I have to say, you know, when I read his statement this morning, and I encourage you to go read it, you know, he takes a swipe at Harry Reid and he takes a swipe at the Democratic leadership. And frankly, that's not stuff, you know, if he wants to have any future in politics, he should have simply said, you know, okay, I'm sorry, and I'm going to make it work. I mean, you've got to play within, you know, with other people. You got to play well with others. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I heard a statement on a local station in Cincinnati, but the way I kind of felt about that was for the Democrats to win in Ohio, they got to think outside the box, and
I absolutely agree with you, Rich. And Hackett could have gotten that message out through a surrogate. Hackett could have had somebody say, some third person. Could have had some third person say, well, the reason Hackett pulled out is because basically he got pushed out by the Democrats, you know, and the insiders and like that. I mean, that would have been the appropriate way to do it. But instead to come out, you know, just slapping him upside the face and then saying, you know, and I'm never coming back to politics again, which Hackett said. He said, I will never come back to politics. And you're like, what? You know, what? This guy wasn't serious about being in politics in the first place then. So,
right.
I, you know, that's my take on it. I just, you know, I think that maybe this might actually be one of those cases where the Democratic Party made the right decision if Hackett is that much of a loose candidate. And I realize, again, I say, you know, I realize that a lot of people think that Hackett is a hero, and he is in many regards.
Well, in Ohio, the Republicans are so corrupt, a lot of them run on actually the lesser of two evils campaigns. That's how Bob Taft went to elections.
Yeah.
I'm the lesser of two evils.
Yeah,
I'm not a good guy, but I'm the lesser of two evils. You know,
I understand. But apparently, according to Paul Hackett, this call was being made by the National Democratic Party, not by the guys in Ohio. But
okay,
I just, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and let me think about it. Let me sit on this for a little while. But
okay,
but my initial take when I read Hackett's withdrawal statement was that it sounded, it didn't sound like the kind of statement that you would expect from somebody who wanted to be a statesman.
Well, he's a novice. Maybe he doesn't know how to handle himself. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe he just needs a couple more years to figure this stuff out. But I think he's shot himself in the foot here. I really think he has, and I think it's I think that he shot the Democratic Party in the foot at the same time, and that's a shame. I mean, maybe they've done him wrong, but there's other ways, more appropriate ways, and actually more effective ways to deal with it than just coming out, you know, with your gun blazing like that. And, you know, to mix metaphors. Thanks a lot, Rich. Good to hear from you. Trey in North Carolina. Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Trey, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I want to make two quick points. They tie in together from the Dick Cheney shooting and the domestic spying program. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, they always say that, you know, the president keeps us safe. In my opinion, law enforcement keeps us safe, and the executive branch is supposed to enforce the law. So when the executive branch breaks the law, then they're actually not keeping us safe. And this thing with Dick Cheney them not allowing law enforcement, local law enforcement to speak to him is just another example of how the Bush administration disrespects the law and doesn't, you know, support law enforcement.
Absolutely. Or, you know, it could be disrespect. It could be, you know, Cheney saying, oh, you know, I'm not one of the little people. I don't have to talk to the police after I shoot a guy in the face. Or it could be Cheney trying to hide something, like the fact that he was drunk. I mean, this guy is the first vice president in the history of the United States. He's the second vice president in the history of the United States to shoot somebody. He's the first vice president in the history of the United States to come into office with two criminal convictions, both of which involved alcohol. So, you know, it's like, you know, two and two, what is two and two equal? I mean, you start putting this stuff together. Trey, I'm out of time here. I appreciate your call, and we will continue this conversation as time goes on. It's 56 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. And we'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's interesting. The Paul Hackett, my Paul Hackett comment seems to have really lit up the chat room. And perhaps it's something we should discuss a little more. Do you know Paul Hackett's positions on any of the issues? I frankly don't. I know that he said that if somebody breaks into his house, that he would execute the death penalty. He said there won't be any discussion of the death penalty. It'll just be a simple 911 call. Come pick up the body. I'm a tough guy. I'll kill anybody who comes into my house. But does that sound like I'm attacking Paul Hackett? I guess it does. So that's going to further upset folks in the chat room. Okay, what can I say? I just really think that if what had happened, here's my take on what happened. Hackett had said that Brown had said he wasn't going to run for the Senate against DeWine. And so Hackett said he was going to. Hackett then said that he wasn't going to run for the House against Mean Gene Schmidt, which is a race that he probably could have won and should be in. And so the Democrats, my understanding is, the Democrats came to him and said, run for the House against Mean Gene, and, you know, this Brown guy who's already got a $2 million war chest is going to run against the Senate against DeWine, and we think both of you can win. And Hackett said, no, I said that I'm going to do this and not that, and therefore that's how it's got to be. And if I can't have it my way, damn it, I'm leaving. I'm never going to go back to politics. That's the essence of what I got out of the news reports. Now, maybe I missed something. And if I did, call me up and set me straight. But I'm sorry, just being anti-war and outspoken and being willing to call George Bush an idiot and being willing to say that Bush is more of a terrorist than Osama bin Laden, the things that Paul Hackett said that got him in the media, or that the right wing the religious right is the same as Osama bin Laden. That got him in the media. You know, some of these things, that is, statements and positions that, by and large, I do not disagree with. That's not enough to get somebody into the United States Senate. There has to be more than that. And you have to participate in the process. You have to be part of the process, and you have to participate in the process. You can't just stand on the outside and beat people up. People talk about, you know, the caller in the last hour said, you know, what about Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders started the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives, which has some, I think, 56 members now. All of them, most, I believe all of them are Democrats other than Bernie. I mean, he works well with others. My take is that what Hackett has said is that he's not willing to work well with others. On the other hand, I understand and absolutely agree with the notion that the Democratic Party has continually and constantly been selling out to wimps and putting up half-assed politicians, people who are Republican lights. And I frankly don't know enough about Sherrod Brown to even have a take on him. I mean, this my take on this is entirely based on what I on Hackett's words that I read this morning, which said to me, this is a guy who really and truly is leaving politics forever. And it's like Harry Truman said, you know, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. And Hackett said, I can't take the heat, I'm getting out of the kitchen. And, you know, he says it's all about he gave his word, or it's all about somebody else gave their word, and like that. And, yeah, that may well be true. But is it appropriate to try and bring down a party? Well, I don't know. You know, it's because I'm out here saying constantly that the Democratic Party has to stop being wimps and standing up for themselves. And at the same time, I see that as strengthening the party, not destroying the party. And I see, on the other hand, I think that when somebody says, that's it, I'm walking away, and I'm not going to have anything to do with this party, I'm not going to have anything to do with it, I'm walking away, then that's somebody who's not suited to the political process. Eileen in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. Hey, Eileen, welcome to the program.
I'm on Paul Hackett's side. I think that was a reaction, and a bad reaction, but at least it was an honest reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Pennsylvania, but I donated to his campaign. In fact, I got an email from him this morning. I think that the Democrats are going to get nothing in the 2006 election. We're not going to win in Pennsylvania because we're backing Casey.
Yeah.
And Panaccio is leading in the polls in Pennsylvania, and he's not going to win. Santorum is going to win again because
Actually, Chuck Pinocchio is not leading in the polls. He was leading in that poll that Rob Call, the Zogby call poll that, but only after people were told his position and the problem. And I'm a supporter of Chuck Pinocchio's in Pennsylvania, but the problem is that, you know, he doesn't have the cash.
Right, and the Democrats wouldn't stand behind them. They want to run Casey, and Casey's not going to beat Santorum.
Don't think so?
No, it's Santorum light, just like they say. That's what he is, yeah. And I don't believe he's going to win.
So educate me here if you're familiar with Ohio politics. Is Sherrod Brown? I mean, my understanding is that Sherrod Brown is being attacked for being too liberal.
No, I'm not that familiar with Ohio politics. It's just that I have listened to Paul Hackett. He's been on several of the talk shows on Air America, and I've read about him. I've gone to his website.
I've had him on this program.
Yeah, and I've heard him on your show, too. And I just, you know, I'm a Marine. My husband, you know, we were both Marines. My husband fought in Vietnam. He has good ideas. He's honorable. And I think that was a reaction. He was angry. And
well, I'm not disagreeing with any of that, but, you know, when somebody makes...
It was honest. I mean...
Yeah.
Did we get honesty from Harry Reid? I am so mad at Harry Reid. I didn't even call there today because I'm afraid of what I'll say.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm fed up with the Democrats. I've just, you know, I've had it. I just don't think we're going to gain anything if they don't stop trying to get to the center so much.
Yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. It's the progressive positions are the positions that are going to win if they can get the word out. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I've written to Kerry and Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy. I've written to all of them, and I, you know, it's to no avail.
Yeah.
But I think we should give Paul Hacken another chance. Let him cool off. And
well, I'm perfectly willing to give him another chance.
Yeah,
you know, somebody said, you know, what's your take on this thing? And my take was that if you're going to essentially issue a public statement that says, I don't like the way this game is being played, I'm taking my ball and going home,
then you
probably shouldn't have been in the game in the first place.
Well, he was a Marine, you know, and he had to play by the rules there. But the other thing, too, is us drawheads are hardheads. So.
Okay. Eileen, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Glenn.
Hi, Tom. I had remembered seeing Hackett interviewed on television and having a positive impression, but most of what I remembered were the interviews were about him being a Marine and the election he came close to winning.
Yeah,
but
against Mean Gene Sheehan, was it?
That Ohio guy, and that the Democrats came in late to support him because they thought he didn't have a chance and he almost beat him, and, you know, how great that was or something. How unusual. They were probably surprised. But so I looked up his Hackett for Senate site just to refresh my memory on some of his positions, and I think a lot of us would agree with him, like, for instance, on Alito, that his election is not in the best interest of the United States, he said, and will tilt the court to the right.
I agree with you, Glenn. And Hackett is pro-choice, and he's pro-gay rights. I mean, you know, he's a rather progressive guy. I'm agreeing with all of that. I'm just saying that if you're trying to work within a political party, and you can't work things out, you don't go out to the public and say these guys are liars. This thing stinks, and unless you've got some really good, strong reason to say that. Frankly, I just didn't feel maybe he should. The thing to do if you want to keep your, you know, political life intact or whatever is, you know, pop up as, reincarnate yourself as a Green, or come back in another campaign, or come back in another candidacy or something like that. But, you know, just because he didn't get his way, maybe it's just a, you know, is badly characterized in the media, and I certainly haven't talked to Paul Hackett about this. Right now, David is trying to get him on the line. We're going to try and get him on the program and ask him about it. But
he's trying to change. You know, it's sort of the change from within, but he didn't keep his mouth shut and keep it within. You know.
Well, does that help anybody?
No, it doesn't. He should. If he wanted to change the Democratic Party from within and not become a third party candidate, then he probably needed to sit down with the leaders and say, look, I think I can run and win for your party, but I have to do it this way, and I think that these things are wrong, and we need to change that, and and go about it that way. Because he's taking the right positions. He's talking about the sort of obscene fundraisers that you have to raise $10,000 to attend that the president is.
Oh yeah, but see, at the same time, he also has to play that game right now until he can get himself into a position of power to change that game. That's the weird catch-22.
Exactly.
And to say I'm not going to play this game, but I want to be part of this game, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one.
Glenn,
thanks a lot for the call. I got to boogie along.
Right.
Good to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. The place where reason is our lifestyle choice, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. In just a moment, we're going to Alan Ratner with Talk Radio News. First, Diana in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Diana, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I love your show up here.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, back in the early 90s when they were debating NAFTA and GATT, I remember the first time I saw the name Sherrod Brown was when I'm one of these C-SPAN watchers,
mm-hmm.
especially when it's something about NAFTA or GATT or anything that is for the working person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the Ohio people that really stood firm against NAFTA and GATT. And I taped him. I taped Bernie Saunders. I taped Marcy Kaptur. I mean, these people really stood up for the working people. And I mean, I don't know much about the other guy, the Marine, only what I've heard on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if he has to click his heels and hang tough against working with the system, one thing about Sherrod Brown I noticed is that he is on the floor of the House debating. And it takes a tough guy to do that and know that you're up against the machine.
Yeah.
And Sherrod Brown is for the working guy. And I've never been an Ohio person. I've never been east of Chicago. But I could see that Ohio was a pivotal state when it came to the way our country is going. And
it is. The only one president, and that was Jack Kennedy, has won the presidency without taking Ohio in history.
I think Bernie Sanders actually should be president, but
yeah, I agree with
Brown
you.
Is a good man.
Okay,
so.
Diana, thanks a lot for the information. As I said, I don't know that much about these guys or about this race, and I'm learning as I go along here. Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Alan.
Hi. Well, I'm just going to support what the caller said about Sherrod Brown, but I'll also say that, of course, there is some carping from within parts of the Democratic Party because they're...
Well, how's this thing playing out about Paul Hackett today
saying that he was lied to, and he was saying that he was asked to step down,
right?
Essentially, by the Democratic Party. Essentially, they said no money, no support. Let's not have a bruising race. You're out of here.
Right. And the political calculus was that if Brown and Hackett go after each other in the primary, that's going to strengthen the Mike DeWine, the Republican, and DeWine is going to end up winning the main election.
That may not be a wrong calculation.
Yeah, the reality is that usually when there's a contested primary, whoever comes out of that contested primary against an incumbent loses. I mean, regardless of party affiliation, regardless of race. And
the fact is, for the sort of liberal wing of the party, Sherrod Brown is not a bad guy.
So then what should Paul Hackett have done? I mean,
well, the question was, first of all, somebody said, and I did not double check this before we got on air, I thought he was only 28 years old.
No, he's older than that.
Okay.
I thought he was 43.
So
I may be wrong.
The age thing. I think that he should have.
Yeah, he's 43 years old.
What?
He's 43 years old.
43. Okay, so he's fine. He can run. But the I think he should have run for that Cincinnati congressional seat again. And
against Gene Schmidt.
Yeah, and the Democratic Party should have said, we're going to get behind you.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That's the deal.
But he said that earlier, you know, months earlier, he had promised the person who is going to run in that campaign that he wouldn't run against her. He had said that he was not going to run in that campaign, so several good people came into the race.
Right.
And he doesn't now want to go back on his word. You know, I think that that was probably his original mistake. I mean, in politics, you never say never. And
right.
Apparently he said never.
And
I'm never going to go back.
Before he announced a Senate run, he should have talked to the Democratic Party and said, are you going to get behind me? And they would have gotten behind him in the congressional race. I mean, like it or not like it, independent candidates and people who go against party whatever don't often get elected. It's very rare.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so what's happening in Washington, D.C.
Well,
today?
Of course, the Cheney story just will not go away. And
is the idea that Cheney might have been drunk and that's why the 15-hour delay picking up traction?
Well, that is
and
certainly my contention, but boy, oh boy, I've been talking to some of my right-wing hosts about it, and they've been going after me like with...
You know, CBS actually scrubbed their website of that. They took that off their website. The New York Times rewrote their piece to make it sound like he was actually interviewed the night before when he wasn't. And Cliff Kincaid has issued a news release saying that anybody in the media who points out the fact that there was a 15-hour delay between the time of the shooting and the time that Cheney was interviewed has lost their credibility as part of the left-wing conspiracy.
The local police showed up at the gate and were turned away
right at
night.
Right, but CBS has removed that from their website.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
I mean, but it's true. I mean, you know, it is reported, but and that was the case at the time. But it's like everybody's walking away from this story.
There's another story that the White House is walking away from. There is a man who actually was Bruce Bartlett. He was head of the. I think he was head of the Economic Council under Reagan. He wrote a book called Imposter, How George Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy. And today, Alan Hubbard, who's assistant to the president for the economic policy, basically went after him. He rejected any allegations on this. He said, we spent hours working on the tax cut proposal, and what happens is Bruce Bartlett basically said they just did nothing. They just put the proposal forth and didn't pay any attention to what it was really going to mean.
What a surprise.
interesting coming from the right.
Yeah.
Bush's approval rating 39% in a USA Today CNN Gallup poll.
Yeah, and this is why I think Republicans are running away from him. And yet at the same time, Rove is threatening them, anybody who votes to investigate him. Ellen Radner, thanks a lot. TalkRadioNews.com. It's 27 minutes past.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. The story is getting stranger and stranger with regard to our vice president and his strange shooting spree. And again, you know, how did this happen? They've come up with it. The story has changed several times now. The most recent version of it is that, he was shooting into the sun. I mean, you've got a line of guys. Well, apparently there were three of them in this line. But anyway, you've got a line of people who are walking toward these birds. Why walk toward the sun if you're shooting? I mean, they're on 50,000 acres down there. You walk sideways to the sun or walk against the sun. Have the sun behind you and have the sun on the birds. I mean, A, that doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. It just doesn't make any sense. I know it's going to sound good for the folks who are like, oh, gee, I hadn't considered it. But it just doesn't make any sense. And now CNN is reporting, at this moment as we speak, CNN is reporting that Mr. Whittington, having been struck with birdshot by this poacher, this guy without a bird license, Dick Cheney, is apparently having a heart attack as we speak, and that it may be the kind of heart attack consistent with the heart being irritated by having birdshot in it. So this story is developing. We'll see. I did note yesterday in one of the news stories that we read about Whittington that he was considered to be a moderate Republican. It could be that Cheney has shot the only moderate Republican in the state of Texas. I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. And it'll be interesting to see if, and I don't wish Mr. Whittington ill at all. I mean, we all hope he recovers very well. Let's just, put that right out there. But should, God forbid, he expire, will the vice president of the United States be charged with involuntary manslaughter? Is that how it works? I mean, I'm not an expert on this stuff, and I'm not an attorney, but I do remember when I lived in Vermont, that there was a case. I don't recall if it was in Vermont or if it was in New Hampshire next door. We lived in New Hampshire for a couple of years. But there was a guy out with his son hunting, and he shot his son by accident. His son died, and the guy got charged with involuntary manslaughter or some crime, negligent manslaughter or whatever it was, got charged with a crime for killing his own son. And he was already, just wretched about this thing. So, now, the original story that he was coming up behind Cheney, well, I'm sorry, you don't swing around 180 and fire off a shot, even at a bird. I mean, it's just that's not how that kind of bird hunting works. You've got this 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock window that, so you don't cross barrels with somebody else and so you don't shoot other people. What astounds me is that the press wanted to know every little detail about Bill Clinton's sex life and what happened with that Monica woman and what happened in that room and when did it happen and you got Ken Starr out there and what's the deal with the cigar and all this other stuff. And I'm not seeing much reporting on the fact. I'm really not seeing much reporting out there in the mainstream media on the fact that there was a 15-hour gap from the time that Dick Cheney shot this guy and bullets ripped through, or pellets, birdshot pellets ripped through this guy's face, neck, and chest from that moment until Dick Cheney was interviewed by the local police department who has jurisdiction in that area. And my understanding is that, when you have a gunshot wound and you have a gunshot accident, that it's got to be looked into, shall we say. It's got to be looked into. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jerry in Sacramento, California on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to us on KSAC there. What's up?
I had heard yesterday on the news here, of course, they spun it to the gentleman stepped in front of Cheney. And then the other thing was that the guy startled him, and he just, you know, Cheney heard a noise, just spun and shot, and that's when he got the guy.
See, that's what I think is likely. I think that, number one, Cheney probably had a few beers or whatever he drinks. And number two, that this guy was walking near him, and Cheney is you know, obviously a paranoid. I mean, you know, look at he got us into a war without any evidence that there was somebody out to get us. You go all the way back to the 1970s. In fact, if you go to commondreams.org right now, you can click on a piece I wrote about how Cheney and Rumsfeld back in the 70s were ginning up a phony threat from the Soviet Union about a weapons of mass destruction that turned out never existed. And that they have been using fear for 30 years and terrorizing the American people for 30 years, much to the financial benefit of their benefactors and the corporations that they go to work for. But it may well be that part of the reason why they've been doing it is because they themselves are fearful and clinically paranoid. And so you've got a guy who's clinically paranoid, and he's had a few drinks, and somebody makes a little noise behind him, and he turns around and thinks Osama bin Laden's coming after him.
Well, and of course, they're sticking to the Republican mantra of... you know, just shoot first and ask questions later. And, of course, you have to blame the victim.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and they're very good at that. Jerry, thanks a lot for the call and for the point you make. Toya in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Toya.
Hi. You know, I was just listening to you and watching CNN, and I think that the attorney that he shot, Whittington, I think he is indicative of America. Cheney just shoots and shoots and shoots, and Whittington just makes excuses, you know, oh, it wasn't his fault, and we'll just overlook it, and listens to three and four different stories about how it happens, and, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
no, well,
like,
said.
We're
it's
him.
A,
we're we, America is Whittington, you know.
Yeah, he's a metaphor for America.
Yeah, it's us. We
well
might as well be laying in that hospital, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well said.
And, of course, the guy was drunk. I mean, obviously there was alcohol involved. Or if the hours that lapsed would, you know, why would you not say what happened when, if he was your friend? You'd concern.
Yeah.
Alone, you'd report it.
Yeah. No, you know? you make a good point. Toya, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing
right.
with us. I appreciate it. Good comment. Jeff in South Hero, Vermont. Hey, Jeff, listening to WVAA. What's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing today?
Good.
Listen, I'm not a hunter, but I know a ton of hunters up here. And, you know, a couple things. I mean, if you're hunting without a license, which Cheney was doing, that's what a stamp is. That's your license for that state.
Mm-hmm.
You would lose your hunting license and your privileges for life. You would lose them for life.
Well, apparently, here's, you know, I'm not wanting to sound like I'm trying to defend Dick Cheney, but this is what I heard in the mainstream media, okay? So,
right.
You know, for what it's worth. Is that this stamp, the requirement for this stamp on your hunting license, only went into effect about 6 or 7 months ago in Texas.
Okay.
That there is a provision that says that for the first year, if somebody doesn't have it, we'll figure that they didn't know about it, and it's a $25 fine or something like that.
Maybe that's so in Texas, but, I mean, I know in Vermont, if you shoot somebody in an accident, like, you're in serious trouble.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I lived in Vermont for 10 years, and,
right.
and, in fact, I just moved out here to Oregon in April of last year, and so it's been, you know, just 11 months ago. And my recollection is that in our state of Vermont there was a pretty bad hunting accident 5-6 years ago that involved a father and a son, and that father ended up getting prosecuted.
I remember that case, but also, like, you know, if you shoot anybody, the police are supposed to be notified immediately, and they come down, and no matter what the facts of the case are, they put you in handcuffs, and they take you to the station, and they get your statement.
Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody's been drinking from that point, and I heard a lot of local hunters here talking about it, they were like, of course he's drinking. Of course. 14 hours later, that's a classic excuse.
Especially for a guy who's got two DUI convictions.
Right. And what happens,
I mean, how often do you have to drive drunk to get get busted for DUI twice?
And let's say if this guy... Well, let's say a politician, too, a rich guy, gets busted twice on DUIs.
Yeah, a multimillionaire politician.
Right, right. But if you shoot somebody in the face while you're drunk and you're hunting, I mean, that, and if the guy dies, that's involuntary manslaughter.
Yeah, well, we'll see
Straight
how this
up.
Plays out, because right now CNN is reporting that Whittington is having a heart attack, and that it appears to be the result of birdshot in his heart. So,
I'm not a real conspiracy nut, but this sounds pretty simple to me.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this is not the grassy knoll. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate
Have
it.
Have a good
You too. Although, you know, we got the grassy knoll figured out. That's a whole other thing. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, well, I think the biggest story here of all might be I notice a pattern with the Secret Service here. You know, if they are, you know, if they are covering up some kind of a crime or mishap on a part of Dick Cheney, it just follows the pattern of you know, the Bush daughters, you know, smoking marijuana and take cocaine. These stories I heard of them doing this sort of thing in front of the Secret Service, and they don't do anything about it. I mean,
yeah.
their job is supposed to be to physically protect these people, not to be going around covering up crimes.
Although the reality is, Joe, that the Secret Service has been covering up for presidents way back. I mean, you know, Franklin Roosevelt had a girlfriend. Eisenhower had
a
girlfriend.
Crime. That's not a crime. I mean,
well, actually, it was in a lot of states back then. It actually was in a lot of states back then. But still, you know, yeah, I would agree with you that shooting somebody when you're drunk is a little different than having a girlfriend on the side. But I would agree with you that the Secret Service is probably covering something up here. I mean, they probably perceive that as their duty. So. This is from CNN, by the way. Man shot and wounded by Vice President Cheney suffers minor heart attack after bird shot becomes lodged in his heart, hospital spokesman says. So,
yeah, well, that's no coincidence they want to keep the sheriff away for 22 hours. I mean,
yeah, 15 hours. Turns out it was 15 hours. But, yeah, good point. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. It's amazing. The plot thickens. We'll get back to your calls on this. 1-866-440-8466. And we can talk about Paul Hackett some more if you want. I want to get back to what's going on in Iran and Iraq, by the way, as well. We'll continue with that in the program. It's 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Come together right now over me.
And welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Amazing breaking news. Number one, Mr. Whittington having a heart attack from birdshot. Number two, our piggy alert.
291 billion pounds, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
refuse.
Yeah, refuse per every day. And by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the Pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every 4 and 3, you've got a pile of this
excrement.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the bigger piggies in their starched white shirts. This from the New York Times just now, Edmund L. Andrews. The federal government is on the verge of one of the biggest giveaways of oil and gas in American history. New projections buried in the Interior Department's just published budget plan anticipate that the government will let companies pump about $65 billion worth of oil and natural gas from federal territory. That is land that you and I own over the next 5 years without paying any royalties to the government. New York Times goes on to say, short of imposing new taxes on the industry, there may be little Congress can do to reverse its earlier giveaways. And here's where it gets really weird. I've been wondering for a while, why are big oil companies like Kerr McGee advertising on CNN when they're not trying to sell me an oil well? Why would they run these ads? Well, maybe it's that they don't want anybody, maybe they don't want bad publicity. Last week, Kerr McGee Exploration and Development, a major industry player, began a brash but utterly serious court challenge that could, if it succeeds, cost the government another $28 billion in royalties over the next 5 years. If Kerr McGee is successful, says the New York Times, administration projections indicate that 80% of all oil and gas from federal waters in the Gulf of Mexico would be royalty-free. George Miller, California Democrat, says one of the greatest train robberies in the history of the world. So, boy, the plot thickens, the plot sickens. Ronald in Bennington, Vermont, WBTV. Hey, Ronald, what's up? Ronald?
Tom?
You are live and on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. What's up?
I was calling about the Dick Cheney shoot, and I mean, I agree it was likely an accident. I don't see any reason it was, but the media spin on it is more making a joke out of it.
Right.
And, I mean, he didn't report it for 24 hours. Can you imagine the spin they would have put on this if it was Ted Kennedy?
Well, it was the exact same thing. Kennedy had an accident, and it didn't get reported, and a woman died. And Kennedy was, the assumption is that the reason that he didn't report it right away was probably because he was intoxicated. Now, this we're revisiting ancient history, but they went nuts. I mean, it destroyed Ted Kennedy's ability to, he was the presumptive presidential candidate.
Right.
You know, and never again did he run for president, even entertain the idea of running for president. I mean, this just blew him completely out of the water. Ronald, thanks a lot for the point. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if Ted Kennedy had done this? It's Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just was listening to you guys talk about, you were talking about Cheney's two DUIs.
Yeah.
And if this guy that just got shot happens to die, heaven forbid, you're talking to him being up for voluntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. Now, is drunk driving a felony?
I don't know. You mean drunk shooting?
Huh?
You mean drunk shooting?
Well, no. He's been convicted of two drunk drivings, right, before?
Right. Two DWIs, yeah.
Okay. Are those felonies?
I don't know.
Yeah, see, I don't know either. But if he got charged for involuntary manslaughter, would that not be a federal offense, or would he be facing the three strikes and you're outlaw?
Yeah, my board operator here, Alex Goldmark, informs me that DUI can be a felony. I guess it depends on the state, or it depends on the type of DUI it is. I mean, I've never been arrested for drunk driving, so I have no experience in this area. But could it be Cheney's third strike? That's an interesting question. Yeah, three strikes and you're out.
Right.
That's an interesting one. That's state laws, though. I think you have to do all three strikes in the same state, because there are these three strike states. Or is there a federal three strike law? There is, isn't there?
What about running for politics? Can you have a felony and run for office?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm just not sure. I mean, there's
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so
well thanks
we'll
anyway.
Have to look into it. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Tom in Sacramento, California. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I think most of it's been covered by other people. I used to live in Vermont. Basically, what Mr. Cheney did is what's called a sound shot, which is something you should never do. He pulled the trigger before he thought he was shooting at a bird.
Presumably.
Yeah.
He might see. My take on it is that he thought he was shooting at a terrorist.
Pardon me?
I think he thought that somebody had, this is a guy, keep in mind, this is a guy who lives in constant fear. He is continually concerned, and perhaps rightly so, that there are terrorists out there trying to murder him. And wherever he goes, he's got like guys surrounding him. He walks with a court of, completely surrounded by Secret Service. Wherever he goes, he's fearing for his life. After 9/11, he went and he hid out. He's constantly in his undisclosed bunker.
Yeah,
he's constantly hiding.
I
think that, he got spooked and he thought that a terrorist somehow got onto that game preserve and was trying to take him out, and he was going to shoot the guy.
Well, if in fact there are pellets in this man's heart, it means he shot him and the man was actually facing him, at least in profile.
Right.
Which is even worse. I mean, I figured this out like about 36 hours ago, that he just spun about 180 degrees and blasted before he...
Well, that was the original report. Now they're saying, no, this guy was walking toward Cheney. Yeah, was in front of him. He went out to get his bird, and he was walking back. And
but
that's
then he's blind.
Yeah, well, that, and then they're saying, well, he was blinded because they were shooting into the sun.
Well,
and then
it was the afternoon, and that doesn't make any sense.
No, it was sundown. It was around 5:30, 6 o'clock. Sundown is 6:30 there, but or 6 o'clock. But what doesn't make any sense
walking,
is why would you
walking
be walking...
West.
Into the sun. Yeah, why would you be walking west if
nobody would do that.
Yeah, well, that's my take on it. I agree with you, Tom, but that's their story and they're sticking to it. Tom, I got to run. Thanks a lot for the call, though. Amazing, this U.S. royalty plan. I want to get into this, and I got to tell you about this insurance scam in the next hour of our program. 57 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Wow.
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Here's the latest news. A heart attack article just posted over at the CNN website. Dr. David Blanchard, the hospital's emergency room chief, says Whittington suffered an asymptomatic heart attack without displaying symptoms such as chest pains or breathing difficulty. He said a roughly 5-millimeter piece of shot became lodged in or alongside Whittington's heart muscle, causing the organ's upper two chambers to beat irregularly. Harry Whittington, 78, is in stable condition in intensive care and will remain hospitalized for up to 7 days, according to hospital officials. In the meantime, the folks over at the Reed Report have put together the Ballad of Deadeye Dick. I kid you not.
Oh, my God. The vice president just shot his
honey
pigeon in the face.
Mama just shot a man. I thought he was a quail.
Run, Dan, run.
So I nailed him in the grill with my shotgun. And I didn't tell anyone. I nearly blew him all away. Mama, ooh, didn't mean to make you mad. If I'm in an undisclosed location tomorrow, carry on, like nothing really matters.
Who's going to tell the press corps? Hey, what about that lady?
Hey, George. Hey, George. You want to go hunting with me? Yeah, sure. Hey, what do you say we take that little fat dumpling? No, 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 no. I'd love to see that little bastard run to the woods. Hey, you know what, George? Look out. Heads up! How do you like that, George? Hey, you know what? Maybe I should have gone to Vietnam. This is kind of fun. Hey, five deferments? Get out of here. Next time we have a war, I'm signing up, Jack. I'm G.I. Joe. No, I'm G.I. Dick. Deadeye Dick. Hey, think fast, George. Think fast. Hey, next time, let's take that George Clooney guy with us, too, huh? What do you say? We're hunting in the woods with just the boys. How do you like that there, George, huh? You like that? Yeah, take that. Who's the president now, huh? Who's the president? Who's the daddy? I'm Dick Cheney, bitch. This one's for you, David Gregory, Dana Milbank, and all you other pansies in the press corps.
Oh, my. Well, thanks to the folks over at the Reed Report, reedreport.com, juice casting a... the Ballad of Deadeye Dick, a Valentine's Day love letter to his friends in the White House and the press corps from down on the Texas range. Yes. And the news, Harry Whittington, stable condition, but he's going to remain in the ICU for a while. I'm wondering if this was why he was in the ICU for the first couple of days. Is this new news or is this old news? Another thing that we probably won't find out. For a while. Speaking of people who are in the ICU, Tracy Pierce, 37, lived a full life. He grew up with family and faith, went to a Catholic school. This, by the way, an article by Jim Flink in the Kansas City Channel, KMBC. He grew up with family and faith, went to a Catholic school, got married, had a son, even had the car of his dream. It was the perfect life. He's been strong, he has, his wife Julia Pierce said. 2 years ago, Tracy Pierce's life changed dramatically when he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. I have no treatment, he told KMBC's Jim Flink in May 2005. 3 months has gone by and I haven't had any treatment. Why? When Flink talked to Tracy Pierce, his cancer was attacking his body. Despite being fully insured, every treatment his doctors sought for him was denied by his insurance provider. First Health Coventry deemed the treatments were either not a medical necessity or experimental. I don't know what else to do but just wait, Tracy Pierce said last May. As he waited, his doctors appealed again and again, including a 27-page appeal spelling out Tracy Pierce would die without care. Coventry dismissed each request. I As William Soper said, a physician, he said, it's purely economical. You never see an insurance company try to block an inexpensive test. Cancer ravaged his body, moving from his kidney to his lungs and then to his brain. His wife said, now we're just trying to the point where we're trying to make him comfortable. But even as he was dying, for more than a week, his insurance company denied him oral morphine, which had been prescribed to reduce his pain. An hour and a half after Tracy Pierce talked with Flink, the reporter from the TV station here, he took a nap and never woke up. His family calls his case death by denial. His wife said they just wrote a prescription for him to die. For Julie Pierce, it was 15 months of watching her husband die slowly, painfully, and helplessly with no chance at life-saving treatment, Flink reported. Julie Pierce said, my mother always told me to get a good job with insurance. For what? It hasn't done anything. Here's another one. Last fall, 12-year-old Nathan Crabtree was an outgoing child ready for new school. He says Nathan often played sick to extend summer vacation by a day or two. To prove his point, his dad took Nathan to a doctor for a test, which showed Nathan had an aggressive form of leukemia that needed immediate treatment. Flink reported that a hospital room has become Nathan's classroom. He spent just 2 days of his sixth grade year with classmates. Mostly he's been at Children's Mercy Hospital. It's not going away, so they're going to send me to Minnesota, Nathan said. Doctors wrote to Nathan's insurance company, urging it to send him to the nation's foremost research hospital. Nathan's bags were packed when his father's insurance company, Coventry, refused to pay for the care, calling it experimental. Dr. William Soper, the executive director of Mid-America Medical Affiliates, he says, I think they expect or depend on people giving up after the first phone call. Lee Crabtree said he has a helpless feeling when he looks at his son and tries to explain why he can't help him live. The feeling is beyond words, he said. It makes you feel hollow. Late Friday, KMBC learned that Nathan's mother found out she could apply for coverage with Blue Cross Blue Shield at her workplace, and so she had applied. When Coventry had spent months denying and calling experimental, Blue Cross Blue Shield approved on the first request. Nathan Crabtree leaves for Minnesota on Sunday morning. Remember those Harry and Louise ads? Back when Hillary Clinton was saying that she wants to set it up so that you have to go to a government bureaucrat. They're going to decide what your medical care is. And so what did we get instead? We got corporate bureaucrats deciding what our medical care is. I mean, this is incredible. And on top of that, the Bush administration, in an effort to help the corporate bureaucrats be even more profitable, is making it more and more difficult for Americans to get medications from anybody other than American Republican campaign donors. This is from the Los Angeles Times. The U.S. government apparently is stepping up seizures of cheap drugs ordered by Americans, mainly seniors from abroad, Canadian pharmacies say. Now, this isn't stuff like, you know, Rush Limbaugh writing off to a Canadian pharmacy and getting 50 Oxycontins. Instead, we're talking about, for example, Samuel Robert Greenberg, a Laguna Niguel retiree. This guy's 73 years old. He ordered anti-cholesterol pills and glaucoma drops from a Canadian pharmacy. Why? Because at the local pharmacy, it costs $3 a pill. And if he gets it from the Canadian pharmacy, it's $1 a pill. He points out that the federal government intercepted his inbound delivery of Lipitor and glaucoma drops. Said, you can't have them. He points out that he says, forget about the heroin. They're going to stop the Lipitor. And it's true. You can walk into the streets of any city in America and buy heroin that was made outside the United States. You can buy cocaine that was made outside the United States. You can buy pot that was grown outside the United States. You can nowadays you can buy meth that was made in Asia. It's now the new headquarters for meth in the world. You can walk into any American city and buy any of these illegal drugs made outside the United States. But God forbid somebody who's 73 years old wants to order some Lipitor from Canada where it costs one-third as much. The federal government is on that one. Boy, oh boy, the Bush administration really knows how to protect Pfizer. The pharmacies, this is from the Los Angeles Times, who sell drugs by mail and over the Internet, say their shipments are being intercepted by U.S. customs officials around the country where foreign mail is being handled. It's huge. We've had over 800 seizures in January, said Barney Britton, president of Calgary-based Minute Drugs, up from a typical 15 seizures in a month. Seizures, you know, snatching the medications for these elderly people. Other pharmacies report 4- to 5-fold increases. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Your insurance company says, no, we're not going to pay for it. You try to get your pharmaceuticals from Canada where it's less expensive because they have a national health care program and they can negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies, and the Bush administration says, no, you can't do that either. Sorry. if you want to get medical care in this country, you got to get shot by the vice president. Then we'll get you to a hospital. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman Radio Program, a place where tuning in is as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. Probably still very much the case. So welcome back to our program. Sue in Milton Keynes, England, on the line. Hey, Sue.
Hi, Tom. About the
thank you for listening to us in the UK.
Oh, I'm glad to. It's good. It's interesting stuff. You were talking about people dying of cancer or waiting for insurers to, pay or not pay.
Yeah, and you have government bureaucrats there making decisions, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I've watched several people die slowly of cancer. You know, my mother, my father, my grandmother, uncles and aunts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough. And it would have been a heck of a lot more tough if I'd had to mess around with insurers as well.
In other words, they had access to medical care, they had access to palliative care, and it was all free. And you didn't have to worry about filling out forms, and you didn't have to worry about begging an insurance company to provide them with treatment.
And it's so much better. I mean, we complain that there's not enough money put into it, and therefore some experimental treatments can't be paid for, and some things aren't as good as they might be. But if we paid enough, as much into our system as you pay into yours, between you, we'd have everything.
Oh, yeah, I know. In the UK, on a per-person basis, on a per-capita basis, you're paying less than half of what we're paying.
Yeah.
And what we're paying, half of us aren't insured. Incredible. Yeah. So all in all, you're saying that you're happy with the system you have in the UK?
It sounds a heck of a lot better.
Than what we have here, yeah. Well, I've used your system there, and it sure seemed a heck of a lot better to me, too. Sue, thank you for the call.
Thanks, fine.
Great to hear from you. Jackie in Port Townsend, Washington. Hey, Jackie, welcome to the program.
Hi. I was just thinking about the Paul Hackett.
Mm-hmm.
And how maybe we should be supporting him because he seems to appeal to Republicans.
Well, I do support Paul Hackett. Let me make that very clear. If Paul Hackett was running for political office, I'd be standing at the front of the line. I've had him on this program. I think he's a great guy, and I think he'd make a great candidate. That said, this morning he came out and blasted the Democratic Party and said, "That's it. I'm never again going to go into politics." And I thought, and what I was saying was, I thought he shot himself in the foot when he said that, and I thought that he hurt the party as well. And I'm not sure that that's the best thing to do.
Well, I wish he wouldn't have said that as well. But how is his situation unlike voting for the opponent of Maria Cantwell here in Washington, who has a poor voting record as a Democrat? You know, you're putting out that the incumbent has such a better chance of winning,
mm-hmm.
but still, you can't not support somebody because they're not the incumbent.
I agree. I believe in smart politics. Let's understand the system and how it works so that we can take control of it and ultimately change it and make it more fair and more appropriate. We need instant runoff voting in this country because we don't have proportional representation, and instant runoff voting is the only way, constitutionally and legally, that we can create a system where we can have third, fourth, fifth, sixth parties who are actively participating. The only way we're going to get to that is if enough of us get involved in politics. On the other hand, or at the same time, let's say, for example, if I felt that one of my elected representatives was not doing a good job, I may do everything I can to push them in the direction, in a more progressive direction. I may even work for one of their opponents in a primary, for example. But once they're the candidate of the party, of the Democratic Party, because right now the Republican Party is 100% corrupted. I mean, you've got maybe Susan Collins. I mean, maybe three or four Republicans who are not completely over the edge. But by and large, the Republican Party is 100% corrupted. The Democratic Party is only about 50% corrupted. If I had to put a Democrat in versus a Republican, I would do everything I could to get the Democrat in, because the first and most important vote that somebody makes, regardless of all their positions on the issues, is for the leadership. Is for who's the party in power. We have a winner-take-all thing in both the House and Senate. The party in power gets to decide the agenda. They get to decide what bills are going to come to the floor. They get to decide what gets voted on, when it gets voted on, how long the vote is held open, all those things. And the Republicans are terribly abusing this. Just in summary, I would say that I would even work with third party candidates. I encourage people to participate, for example, with the Green Party on a local level and on a state level. But when it comes right down to it and the race gets critical, then even a Democrat that is in my mind 70% of where I want them to be, I would work for.
Does that make sense? I just want to say one more thing that I really appreciate the way that you talk about history, and also that you document where you get your facts. And a person can go right to the horse's mouth, and really that is great ammunition for pointing out what's wrong.
Well, thank you, Jackie. And you'll find if you're ever in search of any of the URLs, and thank you for the call, if you're ever in search of any of the URLs or points, we post some of them in our message board. Usually there's a good discussion going on over there, and also in our chat room, which you can get to by going to tomhartman.com and click live chat, and it'll drop in there, and a lot of the folks in there are very good about reposting the links and things like that. By the way, the Cheney parody that we played a little earlier is from the Reed Report, reidreport.com. /juicecaster/juicecast.php?ID=720. So, but I'm guessing it's right on the homepage of Reed Report, reidreport.com. So, thank you very much for the call. We'll get back to others. And I want to get into this whole thing of what's going on with Iraq and Iran. I've been talking about this all morning or afternoon, wherever you are, evening for Sue in the UK. And we need to get into what is happening in that situation. And what does it mean for us? 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
See how they explain the inexplicable. Watch them all debate.
Welcome back, my friends. Biograph for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. One of our listeners sends me a note saying, let us not forget that when Bill Clinton was being raked over the coals for lying about having sex with his intern, the Republicans were forcing the Secret Service to testify under oath. Remember that? They got his Secret Service detail to come in and hauled them before Congress, as I recall, and had them testify under oath, or maybe it was Ken Starr. In any case, there was some testimony under oath, and the secrecy of the Secret Service was breached in the case of Bill Clinton. Maybe we could do the same thing. Let's find out, what really happened. The Secret Service was there. Let him testify under oath and tell us what Dick Cheney really did. For that matter, let's have Dick Cheney testify under oath. Oh, I forgot. He doesn't do that. 9/11 Commission, he wouldn't testify under oath. That's right. I totally forgot. In fact, when George W. Bush testified before the 9/11 Commission, not only would did he refuse to be put under oath, but he would only testify if Dick Cheney was there. And the rules were such that Dick Cheney was not required to drink anything while Bush was speaking. The last part, tongue-in-cheek, of course. The Wall Street Journal today, lead story, upper right-hand corner, rough neighborhood. Iran plays growing role in Iraq, complicating Bush's strategy. This is something that Americans need to understand. What's going on? What is happening in this region? Bush administration officials who put this remarkable story, Jay Solomon in Washington, Farnaz Fasai in Baghdad, Iraq, and Philip Shishkin in Amada, Iraq. Bush administration officials who promoted war with Iraq envisioned Americans reshaping the country in their own image after the war. Instead, notes the Wall Street Journal, really something very different is going on. What is happening is that Iraq is being reshaped to look like Iran. Now, keep in mind, Iran is like, what, three or four times the physical size of Iraq. It's about twice the population of Iraq. It's got an enormous amount of oil. It's on the Persian Gulf and on the Arabian Sea. It has a long border with Iraq. It also has borders with Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, on the Caspian Sea to the north, which, of course, you've got all those stands up there that are, you know, pumping petroleum out of the old former Soviet states, and a small border with Turkey. So what has happened is al-Jafari, the new prime minister just elected, used to live in Iran. He has close ties to Iran. Iranian businessmen, this from the Wall Street Journal now, Iranian businessmen are some of the largest investors in restoring Iraq's shattered infrastructure. And you can bet that they're not hiring Halliburton, and so that Halliburton is hiring Americans for $150,000 a year and bringing them in there and then marking it up on a cost-plus basis and having U.S. taxpayers pay for it to the tune of billions of dollars. No, they're hiring local people and providing employment. Back to the article. Nonprofit groups from Iran are providing basic health services that crumbled in the chaos following the U.S.-led invasion. Iraq Shiite media are getting training from experts across the border. As Sheikh Kashef El-Khata said, a prominent Shiite cleric and political analyst based in Baghdad, he said, America occupies Iraq, but Iran influences us. Get this, Muqtada El-Sadr. Remember Muqtada El-Sadr? He's the firebrand conservative religious cleric or conservative Muslim cleric in Sadr City is named after his father. Who was a famous preacher, ultimately a martyr. I believe his father was killed by Saddam Hussein. I may be wrong in that, but that's my recollection. In any case, Muqtada el-Sadr, the younger Sadr, it was his militia, the Sadr Brigade, it was his militia that killed the son of Cindy Sheehan. When George W. Bush decided that he was going to arrest or kill Muqtada el-Sadr, remember that? This was like 2 years ago, more or less. I mean, this war has gone on now. It's been, from the time from Pearl Harbor being hit to the end of World War II was a shorter period of time than from 9/11 till today. I mean, this war has been going on for some long time. In any case, Muqtada el-Sadr pledged on a visit to Tehran last month to back Iran in any military showdown with the U.S. Tehran also helped finance and train Shiite militias and paramilitary units in Iraq, such as the Badr Brigades. Now Sunni Arab leaders, this again from the Wall Street Journal today, now Sunni Arab leaders such as Jordan's King Abdullah II have voiced concerns about a possible Shiite crescent stretching from Iran to the Arabian Gulf. Basically, most of the Arab countries have been Sunni. Saudi Arabia is Sunni, Oman, Yemen. You had the Shiites, who I believe control Syria and control Iran. And if they take Iraq, then boom, they've got this. You know, it would be like having the northern U.S. states, and then the Sunnis would be the southern states. I mean, geographically, it's kind of how it would lay out. Back to the Wall Street Journal, a nonprofit group called Reconstruction of the Holy Shrines of Iraq was established in Iran with ties to the Tehran government. On its website, it now boasts of 300-plus construction, cultural, and religious projects it has completed from Baghdad to Basra in the south. All over Iraq now, the Wall Street Journal reports, posters of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the founding father of Iran's Islamic Revolution, quickly adorned the walls of Shiite neighborhoods. And Iraq's supermarkets suddenly were full of Iranian goods, especially food and health products. On the political front, teams of Iranian volunteers traveled to Iraq to instruct Shiite activists in mobilizing mosques and clerics for a big turnout. At some Baghdad mosques, local Shiite leaders started voter education lectures by playing a taped message in Arabic by Iran's conservative supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. They go on to note, one influential Tehran-funded group working inside Iraq is the organization of Al-Aubait, whose leaders include Iranian mullahs and a former Iranian foreign minister. It has dispatched ambulances, doctors, and teachers over the border to Iraq. According to its website, Al-Aubait has held book fairs in Shiite cities such as Najaf and has created a union to promote the shared interests of Iranian and Iraqi Shiite merchants. They go on to point out that Iran is influencing Iraq's media. When Iraqi Shiites set up two broadcast stations called El Farat and Maladi after Mr. Hussein was toppled, they received technical help from Iranians. Everything from A to Z was done by Iran, says Kalzal Ghazi, an Iraqi correspondent for Al Alam, an Iranian satellite news channel. Al Alam, which airs in Arabic, is itself a major influence in Iraq. Unlike Western media organizations holed up in Baghdad, Al Alam has bureaus and correspondents in every one of Iraq's 18 provinces, including those dominated by the Sunnis. Even the Kurds are in on this, which are, you know, generally pro-American and Sunni. But they're cutting deals with the Shiites in Iran as well. I mean, you know, it's on their doorstep. I mean, Iran covers, you know, Kurdistan, the northern part of Iran, northern part of Kurdistan, northeastern part of Kurdistan, or of northern Iraq, is the border with Iran. Tehran has signed two contracts to provide electricity to Iraq from the Iranian provinces of Amara and Dalaya. Tehran and Baghdad have discussed establishing a pipeline taking Iraq's oil to Iranian ports for export. The moves have irritated U.S. officials, though they have no direct way to block them. In November, Iraq's national security advisor, Mowafaq al-Rabai, a secular-minded Shiite, traveled to Iran and signed a memorandum of understanding with the Iranian government. I mean, they're just laying this stuff out. And then at the same time, you've got another article, this is also in the Wall Street Journal, the politics and economics section, Democrats test war as campaign issue. And they talk about Diane Farrell, Democratic candidate for Congress, is running on the anti-war platform. And in Connecticut, against Chris Shays, the Republican. And, you know, they're portraying this is a big gamble. I don't think it's a big gamble. I think it makes common sense. It's a gamble both for her and the Democrats. Strategists from both parties say only 2 dozen to 3 dozen seats of the 435-member House are in play. But she isn't the only Democratic congressional candidate to run on the war. This is by Yochi Driesen. And they talk about Tammy Duckworth, who has been on this program, former helicopter pilot who became a double amputee after serving in Iraq. She's looking for trying to fill a House seat in Illinois. And Navy Admiral Joseph Sestak, who's been critical of the war, is trying to unseat Republican Kurt Weldon in Pennsylvania. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of Democrats out there who are now saying, hey, we're opposed to this war, and that's what we're going to run on. I think it's absolutely marvelous. Because not only has this war been a disaster for the United States, not only did we have, literally, right after 9/11, we had the Arab world on our side, looking at what had happened in New York with the Twin Towers coming down and going, oh, this is terrible. We had the Arab world saying that. And George Bush managed to turn the Arab world, the Muslim world, the Arab world and the Muslim world are not necessarily the same thing. Most Arabs are Muslims, but the Muslim world extends way beyond the Arab world. I mean, all the way to Asia and across the Americas. You know, we have friends here who are Muslims. But in any case, it turned the Muslim world against the United States. I mean, this is just crazy what the Bush administration has done. And the idea that the Democratic Party would think that it's dangerous or controversial to run against the Bush war, I think is really tragic. And we need to be speaking out and letting the Democratic Party know that if they want to win, they need to run against the war. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
friends. 9 minutes before the hour. Just to put a fine point on my closing point in the last rant, this is from the Associated Press today, today's paper. For all the shock in the Western world about the suicide bombings on September 11, 2001, and in Iraq, most Muslims were even more surprised, Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the United States said Monday. The bombings were the result of a cult-like attitude. This is what Saudi Arabia's ambassador said day before yesterday. Here in the United States, he was speaking at a conference, and he said the bombings were the result of a cult-like attitude fomented by al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden that runs counter to the central tenets of Islam, which hold that killing one soul is like killing all of mankind. This is Prince Turki Al-Faisal. He says, inasmuch as the West was surprised, if you like, by this culture of death, I can assure you that the majority of Muslims were even more surprised because this culture of death runs counter to everything that Muslims hold dear to themselves. He went on to add, nothing justifies any terrorist act, whether through suicide bombing or any other activity. This is, and then he goes on, you know, to talk about the Palestinian issue and this, that, and the other thing. But the point is that right after 9/11, we had the Muslim world going, this guy has. It would be like how America felt when Pat Robertson came out and said, we should just assassinate Hugo Chavez. And, you know, we were embarrassed. I mean, you know, this guy's an American, and he's making a fool of all of us. It's so, anyway, it's and George W. Bush could have used that. He could have brought in the Islamic world, the Muslim world, and said, help us find these crazy people among you. And put them out of business. Nah, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to have a war because he knew that he'd get political capital from it, and that's what it was all about. It's all about political capital. Chris in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Good.
I love your books, and I've been listening to the show for a while. And
thank you.
The thing I wanted to point out about Cheney shooting Whittier with a shotgun is that it seems to be following a pattern of provocations recently. I think this is actually a psychological operation. Michael Brown just recently testified before the Senate and let slip that the administration was informed of the levees breaking on the day of. And I think this might be a message to other administration insiders to keep their mouths shut.
Or they'll get shot?
A hunting trip with Cheney is quite an honor, you know, reserved for people like Scalia, and other top administration cronies. So, and furthermore, it also serves the purpose of being a defining moment where we will find out whether or not these men are above the law or whether they're common men just like us.
Well, I think that they've already said that they're above the law. They said, you know, Bill Clinton's not above the law. No, sorry, Bob, but Republicans, yeah, above the law.
Yeah.
They're pretty clear.
They're making money.
Yeah, there you go. That's what it's all about in their minds. Absolutely. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Rick in Geronimo, Oklahoma. Hey, Rick.
How are you?
I am great. What's on your mind?
Got a question for you. I need some liberal help on this one. Got a friend who's a parent, has a degree in teaching, wants to volunteer in I'm not going to say the school system, but in a public school system to help out. Doesn't want a job, just wants to help out, as the Democrats all often say to floundering schools. No, you shouldn't pull your child out and put them in a private school with a voucher. You need to support the school and help them out. Parent tried to do that. Union said, no, can't do it.
The last I looked, Rick, the unions didn't run the schools.
Well, won't let
you need to, you need to be talking to your school board.
Okay, well, but how isn't just by nature, doesn't that go contrary?
No, that sounds like Republican BS. The unions don't run the schools. They don't.
Okay.
It's a simple thing. The school boards schools are run by the school boards, and these are the kind of, you know, I have this friend's stories that spread the kind of, you know, the kind of disinformation that just really is not useful.
Well, it's
is your point that you think that, you know, we should do away with public education?
No.
Is your point that we should do away with unions?
The unions are so inflexible out there and so out to lunch that they don't want to allow any innovations or anybody to come in and rock the apple cart.
Well, that hasn't been my experience, and I've worked with public school districts. I've written 7 books on attention deficit disorder, and I've done in-service trainings for school districts literally from Danville, California to Atlanta, Georgia, and worked with those school districts and worked with union teachers, worked with school boards, worked and Vassar College, for that matter. I mean, in universities as well.
Well,
and I have never encountered what you're talking about. Most of the work that I've done has been with elementary and secondary schools, and I have never encountered what you were talking about. And so I would say that if your friend is having a problem, they should get with the school board or sit down with the administration, because it just doesn't sound like anything that I've ever heard of. It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Dick Cheney.
How do you like that, George? Hey, you know what? Maybe I should have gone to Vietnam. This is kind of fun. Hey, find the permit. Get out of here. Next time we have a war, I'm signing up, Dad. I'm G.I. Joe. No, I'm G.I. Dick. Dead-Eye Dick. Hey, think fast, George. Think fast. Hey, next time, let's take that...
Think fast. Come on, George. Let's go hunting.
What do you say? Hunting in the woods with, just
the boys. Oh, amazing. Yes. Let's just do a little hunting now.
Take that. Who's the president now? Who's the president?
Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, take a deep breath. Conservative Yaron Brooks says business owners should have the right to allow smoking. Jeffrey Feldman from Frame Shop is Open will be here talking about how the trickle-down recovery doesn't work for Katrina victims. That and more right here on the Tom Hartman radio program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. Remember, democracy is participatory. It starts with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Were you lucky enough to get an iPod for Christmas? If you did, now maybe you need some accessories. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics. We're the largest Apple